into the wall's growing shadow with a mixture of dread and determination. They had crossed the burnt sand beach and were within striking distance, but now they were vulnerable to attack from above, from the dead-shot archers of the Solari army. They scanned the wall for signs of its inhabitants, upward and downward, following the ragged contours of the Dromus until it disappeared into the horizon. Nothing. The line of the wall thinned out along its broad curve, and they moved more quickly now as the ground became more certain underneath their feet, the wide plain of the desert opening up around the ash-stone barrier. There it was. The gate of Coronel, the southern gate of the Dromus, 3 days' march from the city of the Solari. The boy could see the two panels of the gateway, each one the size of a great raft turned on end. But what was this? The doors stood open. A trap, some said. But others disagreed, said it was just a bit of luck, that the guards must be napping in the first light of dawn. They should take this chance, they murmured, while they still could. The boy remembered that the Feast of Devouring approached. Perhaps the guards had gone off to prepare for the high holiday. The open doors stood before them. The elders made the decision. The fishermen of Scargill would charge the gate as planned. They crossed the Dromus and entered the gate, steeled themselves for spears, for swords, for fire, for the Emperor's soldiers, warriors of exceptional skill and ferocity who were bred to conquer and slay, who were said to be able to kill with a breath, with a look. They were ready for anything. But nothing rose up to meet them. No fire, no arrows, no soldiers. The Dromus was empty, unguarded. There was no one there. No soldier stood guard, and even the gold they had seen from a distance was nothing more than the sun's first rays reflecting off the temple's tattered dome. No army and no riches here. No food or fresh water either. The storehouses and water barrels stood empty. The fishermen from Scargill, their limbs thin, bones poking out at the joints, who had come, if not for gold, then simply for food for their children, could not go home, not yet. Past the temple, past the fields of spears and upturned earth, the men pushed onward, till the air turned foul. Here at last were the mighty soldiers of the Solari. But the fighting men were not arranged in serried ranks, nor were they spread out in a mighty phalanx of spears and helms. The soldiers lay lifeless, stacked in mounds, left to rot in the sun and the wind, left for the crow's next meal. The men from Scargill, woolly bearded elders and smooth-chinned boys, stopped their advance. There was nowhere else to go, nothing left to see. The boy flung his oilskin over his shoulder, scratched his cheek, and spat. Around them, the Dromus stretched to infinity, its black line holding the last traces of night. Everything else was just sand. The Dying Ray. Chapter 1. Will I see the sky today? Ren Harkwadi sat in darkness, awaiting the sunrise. As the first finger of dawn came sliding down the steep wall of the light well, it changed the color of the stones in his cell from black to brown to a faint muddy yellow. Ren stood from his wooden pallet, took a scrap of polished iron from beneath his blanket, and slid the metal through a narrow slot in the window. It caught the light, filling the small chamber with streaks of blue-gray illumination. Ren let the faint rays wash over his face, hoping they might warm his skin, but the light was too dim. Perhaps the upper rings can see a bit more of the sky? He didn't know. He leaned closer to the window, pressed his head to the slot, and peered upward. If he held himself...